month is a very special month. In our tradition, this is in which month Buddha was born and attained enlightenment and also passed into Parinirvana. This in 1 month, all three very holy occasions took place. So I'm very happy to talk to you all. The sacred Dharma, in this auspicious month. So the next coming full moon, which is on the 17th of this month. Today is 15 over there, right?
Yes.
So day after tomorrow is Buddha Purnima. So that is the Buddha celebration time in India and all over the world. So this is auspicious month and auspicious time. So auspicious greetings for all of you. Now, you want me to talk about how to achieve happiness in the challenging time? Is that right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, okay. So, I think achieve happiness is a very interesting word, because when you achieve happiness, then you become the happiness. When you become the happiness, then challenging time or not challenging time does not have any difference. So therefore, achieving happiness is the main point here. We all try to achieve happiness all over the world. All the people try to achieve happiness. That is why everybody is working day and night, and then. Also, we look at other sentient beings like animals. Then they also working very hard all the time, and they all try to achieve happiness. So that way, everybody is trying to achieve happiness. But when we say happiness, we all, deep inside, we all have the same meaning and the same purpose of why we all want happiness. But then, when we try to define what is happiness, then each person's definition of happiness is slightly different. And even one person, when you are a child, your definition of happiness is slightly different. When you are adult, your definition of happiness is slightly different. When you are become old, your definition of happiness is slightly different. And not only that, for some of us, our definition of happiness yesterday, our definition of happiness today, our definition of happiness tomorrow, sometimes quite different. So that way, happiness is a dualistic perception. It is what we all try to achieve. And nobody has achieved happiness forever. Therefore, nobody has stopped looking for happiness. We are born looking for happiness. We die looking for happiness. So this is what samsara is. Samsara means going in circle. We go in circle for achieving happiness, achieving something. But achieving something that will make us happy, we will be able to say to ourselves, oh, I have got it. I managed it. Now I have achieved what I wanted to achieve. So which is supposed to make us happy. So that way, achieving happiness have this meaning. And the reason why, even though everyone's definition of happiness might be slightly different, but everyone wanted to achieve happiness, in that principle, everybody is the same, because our ultimate potential, our ultimate essence is without any limitation. And therefore, any kind of limitation is suffering. For example, a poor person who don't have food, who don't have shelter, then because of the limitation of no place to stay, because of the limitation of nothing to eat, then that person suffers from that. So that person wanted to overcome that limitation, so try to find a shelter, try to find a food. So once they have achieved that, then that will make them happy. But then, once they achieve that requirement, then that happiness will not last very long, because there is all kind of shelter, there is all kind of food. Therefore, then we will find another kind of food, another kind of shelter that we wanted to have beside the shelter and food that we already have got at that point. So for better shelter, better food, I'm just using these two because these are very basic, but there's many, many other things that we want besides the food and shelter. But then food and shelter is something that we must have. You know, there's no food, no shelter, then we are quite, we are done for it, right? Right? No food, no shelter means pretty bad, isn't it? because of that, I'm using this example. So food and shelter and anything, when we have achieved this, then we find more variety and more choice. And if we don't have those choices, if we don't get those kind of house and those kind of food, then we are suffering. So we work very hard to achieve those kind of shelters and those kind of house foods that we desire. And so, therefore, our happiness from achieving the basic shelter and the basic food is short-lived. And then we will struggle for better ones. And when we achieve those better ones, then again, we will go on finding another types and another kind of something else that we don't have, and we wanted to have those things. So that way, the achieving happiness goes on. And this is, of course, quite bad, because this somehow prevents us from contentment. This somehow makes us always suffer and always struggle. But the reason why we are like that is because our potential have no limitation. So long as there is a limitation, then we wanted to overcome that limitation. When you think about a simple thing like money, then those who have nothing, $1,000 is a very, very big thing. But those who have $1,000, then $10,000 is something to look for. And when they have $10,000, then $1 million is to look for. And when they have $1 million, then $10 million. When they have $10 million, then $100 million. When they have $100 million, then $1 billion. Then when they have $1 billion, then $100 billion. When they have $100 billion, then $1,000 billion. It goes on and on and on. And for example, with a power, like a power, first of all, you like to be respected by people who you know and you care, one or two. But then after achieving that, then you want to be respected by more people for more things, more reasons. Then that respect also have other things develop from it, that is respect and power. Because you just are respected, but you're not listened to. When you say something, they don't listen. But then when you don't say anything, they just respect you. So then you want people to listen to you, people to obey to you, and you want to have power over things. You want everything in your way. You don't like other people's way, but you want your way. So when all of these things are achieved step by step, then there's something else. And it will never end. There's no such thing as limitless, because limitless is limitless. So this way, until we give up, until we give up, people giving up is one thing, but until we give up, then achieving happiness have no end, because what makes me very happy today is already boring thing tomorrow, and then there's something else I want, and then I try to achieve that for one more month. And then I achieve something else, and then that I might enjoy for a couple of days or weeks. Then it will become a boring thing. There will be problems. Therefore, then something else. So this way it will go on. So now how to achieve happiness? Let's keep it at that point. I will talk more about it later. In the challenging time, okay. So in the challenging time, that definition makes it very clear the illusion of happiness. Because we call it challenging time because we are not achieving what we wanted to achieve. And when it is very, very easy to achieve what we wanted to achieve, then that becomes not so easy, we have to struggle for it, then we call it a challenging time. We wanted to achieve something, and somebody also wanted to achieve the same thing or similar thing, and there is two or three or four or five or more, and particularly if thousands and thousands wanted to achieve the same thing, then it becomes a challenge for everyone. And as a result, everybody wanting the same thing, then that same thing becomes very difficult to achieve, and there will be so much obstacle for achieving that. Then that becomes a challenging time. That becomes a challenge, and then the time and situation in which we involve, where lots of challenges, then we call that challenging time. And now, this also can refer to many other situations, such as natural calamities. So natural calamities are also challenging because regularly easy to achieve, which is comfortably sitting in the home, easy to achieve, comfortably traveling around. All of these things are interrupted because the roads are destroyed and houses are destroyed, and the normal everyday livelihood are interrupted. Then that is we call challenging time. So let's say disharmony of the nature, and at the same time disharmony of the people is another thing, because when people's interests are in conflict, then there is a challenge, because what I want and what my neighbor wants are two different things. I want peace and quiet, but my neighbor wants loud and shaking. So then my neighbor have rock and roll party every night from 9 to 3 every night of the day, and I want it to be quiet. Then it becomes quite a big challenge. I can't go to sleep. I don't enjoy it. And then there is a conflict between me and my neighbor. So it becomes a challenge. That is an example. So this way, a challenging time. Now, if we look at the samsara in a very perspective, not taking it too personal, but with a perspective, then always it is challenging. Samsara is always challenging. It is always challenging. We don't have wings to fly. You know, and we have to do so many things to achieve one simple thing. For example, old days, if you wanted to have rice for the dinner, you have to grow rice. It will take months. And you have to dig earth and bring water and plant seed and then take care of the weeds. And you have to do it for day after day after day after day for months. And then there should be no storm. There should be no flood. There should be no drought. Then my rice will grow. Then I can have rice for my dinner. But if any of those things happen, I might have worked for 2 months. After that, there's a big flood, and then there will be no rice. After that, there's a big drought for 1 month, there will be no rice. If some wild animal comes to my rice field and they eat everything, there will be no rice. So that way, that is one kind of challenge. And nowadays, nobody has to grow rice. Somebody's growing somewhere. But those of us, majority of us, we don't have to grow rice. We just go to the grocery shop and buy rice. And so many variety of them. But our challenge is we have to pay two times or three times or four times what we used to pay a year back or 2 years back. And our income does not multiply but two times or three times or four times. But our the price for what we need to live multiplies by two times or three times or four times or five times. Then it becomes a challenge. We used to have only two persons in the family. Now we have four persons, five persons, six persons. But the income is only generated by one person or two persons. And the price of living is gone up by four times or five times. But income did not go up beyond two times. Then naturally we have lots of challenge. You know, somebody have to skip the lunch so that others can have lunch. Somebody have to skip the breakfast so others can have the breakfast. Somebody have to skip the dinner so that others can have the dinner. And the same thing with the shelter. Instead of everybody having one room, then two person have to share one room or three person have to share one room. Instead of everybody having one car, maybe whole family have to share one car. So all of these things become a challenge. So challenge is a relative truth. It is a truth because of our mindset. And this way, now challenge is defined very roughly. But it is defined. So now we put these things together. Achieving happiness in the challenging time. So achieving happiness in the challenging time, that is relatively impossibility. Relatively, nobody can achieve happiness regardless of whether it is challenging time or not, because achieving happiness by pursuing for happiness itself is the cause and condition for not achieving it. Because I want. So what I want always changes its color, changes its shape, changes its size, changes its definition. So always there is something that we have to have, which we don't have. Always. For example, let's say money. That is one of the simplest way to look at it. Now, somebody who is a millionaire is not a billionaire. Somebody who is a billionaire is not a trillionaire. So somebody who owns one world, one entire world, one entire continent does not own the whole world. One who owns the whole world does not own the whole solar system. One who owns the whole solar system does not own the whole universe. So that way it can go on and on and on and on. And another very stupid example I wanted to give, that is somebody who likes to look good and look young. So somebody who is 50 years old but looks like a 20 years old, then when that person becomes 35 years old, the person looks like a 35 years old. So it is not, does not look like a 30 years old. So therefore the person is suffering. I used to look 30 years old, but now I look like a 25 years old. You know? And then when you're 40 years old, you wanted to look like 35 years old, but impossible. So all of these kind of ways somebody who's 80 years old, 80 years old, want you to look like 30 years old. It is very difficult. And even in the skin, in the face, you look like 30 years old, but your knee is not 30 years old. Your hip is not 30 years old. Your lung is not 30 years old. You know, your heart is not 30 years old. So your eye is not 30 years old. So all of these things becomes a source of not being happy. And so this way, by trying to achieve happiness, we will never achieve happiness. But we have to become the happiness. We have to become the happiness. Now, when we find that our potential have no limit, from that moment, we find the answer for the reason why we all want something to make us happy all the time. So that is answered when we find that we have limitless potential. So that way, what makes us happy and what makes us not so happy becomes less solid and less less solid is good, and also less desperate, less desperate. So we are not desperately trying to achieve happiness, because we know we are limitless in our potential. And also at the same time, there is no such thing that we achieve ultimate relativity. So we achieve relatively and ultimately. So we try to achieve the ultimate relativity, then we have all these challenges, all these pains and problems and struggles and disharmony. So that is one way to look at this. And another way is challenging. Challenge is always there. Long as there is the I, not the I to look at, not the I in our face, but the I, you know, the I, me. Long as there is I and me, there is challenge. Because there's only one I, and there is countless others. On this earth right now, there is over 5,000 million others, and only one I, one me. So already challenge. And therefore, if you realize that everybody wants to achieve happiness, like me, when you know that, then that kind of spiritness and that kind of personal agony for not achieving the happiness the way I want it becomes much, much less. The kind of desperateness becomes much, much less. And we can almost say that we will less chance to be neurotic about it. Neurotic about achieving happiness the my way. Because if the 6,000 million want everything my way, then there's 6,000 million my ways. So each other's wish to achieve my way conflict with everybody else's my way. So when one knows that, then for the sake of oneself, then if, of course, if you are more mature, then for the sake of everyone else. But at least for the sake of oneself to start with, for the sake of oneself, one will stop being too much centered around my ways, because it is not good for you. It is not good for me, because my way is on everybody's way. So on everybody's way, and it somehow becomes a stumbling block for everybody. Everybody's my way becomes a stumbling block for my way. So this way, challenge becomes much less than split. Now, these are the intellectual as well as some more broader way to look at the achieving happiness in that challenging time. Now, as a person who meditates and person who prays, to a person who is already Buddhist or having something like Buddhism in their life, then there is another way. That is, every day we say, may all sentient beings be free from suffering. May all sentient beings be happy. So this kind of, these are the two of the four limitless thoughts. So for example, with these two, then when we say this every day, we mean it every day, then a challenge becomes very weak. Challenge becomes not so desperate. Challenge does not become that much of a big deal. Achieving happiness for oneself become not that big deal. When somebody else is happy, it makes you happy. That is much better than it makes you happy only when you are happy. If you are that kind of person who is only happy when you are happy, then there is likelihood that when anybody else is happy, then that person will be unhappy. We call that jealousy. We call that envy. So that makes us unhappy. So now, having less jealousy, less envy, then others' happiness becomes cause and condition for one's happiness. At the same time, challenging time also becomes more positive, because challenging time, that means people are suffering. And when you have developed compassion, then when there is somebody suffering, instead of you are seeing your suffering as a magnified sort of manner, you see other people suffering, so that you temporarily forget your suffering, and you see others suffering, and you sometimes do something to help others to overcome suffering. But if not, then you at least will pray, will pray for them to overcome their suffering. So this way, the challenge becomes not so much of a challenge, negative way. A challenge becomes ways and means to exercise your ability to alleviate others from pain and problem. I think you can learn this from certain calamities. For example, when there is some kind of natural calamities, then people will forget themselves, and people will do everything to save others. So that way, that way, instead of they are saying to themselves, why this is happening to me, why this is happening to me, now they just look everywhere to find somebody to help. And long as they can, they will go on helping others. So when they go on helping others, they are not thinking about their own suffering. So this way, challenging time, when you have a good heart, and when you have, let's say, dedication to do something for others, then it does not become a challenge anymore. It does not become a suffering anymore for you. It becomes an opportunity to do something for the others. I'm not saying one should look for natural calamities so that one can practice these. Definitely not. Natural calamities or any kind of man-made calamities should not happen. Man-made disasters should not happen. But if it happens, that one does one's best to help others will naturally make you overcome your own unhappiness, and it makes you actually happy that you can help others. So you can say to yourself, I saved one person, I saved two person, I saved three person. Is there any more to be saved? What can I do? So this situation become a positive situation naturally, because you have the good understanding naturally that nobody likes to suffer, and you have ability to do something about others to overcome their suffering. So that is one way. Another way is when we are meditating, when we are practicing meditation, that more challenge is better for our progress. For example, we go to a very remote area, live in a very remote place where nobody is there, no one making noise, no one doing anything, and meditate there. It is very easy, very quiet, very serene, very easy. But we live in the city, right next to the metro and the highway, and so day and night, there will be trains passing by, there will be big trucks passing by, there will be all kinds of cars and vehicles going by, and there's so much noise, so much vibration. I'm not talking about the energy sort of vibration, you know, the real vibration, just the ground is shaking, the house is shaking. So when all that kind of things are happening, then try to meditate is difficult. But then if you are able to meditate in such a condition, then you become a really good meditator. I don't mean that, you know, you should look for an apartment right next to the metro or the train. You know, I don't mean that. But if that is what happens to you, then that is a challenge for your quiet meditation. So it doesn't have to be, because that is like you learn how to swim in the ocean. You don't learn how to swim in the swimming pool. But if you learn how to swim in the ocean, it is difficult. But if you can swim in the ocean, that swimming in the swimming pool is very easy. Because ocean have current, ocean have waves, ocean water is salty, it gets into your eye, it hurts like a pepper. So that way, that is not there in the swimming pool, because there's no waves in the swimming pool, there's no currents in the swimming pool, the swimming pool water is not salty. So that way, it is easy for you. So this way, challenge of any type, from the motivational point of view, from the meditation point of view, you can turn them into positive conditions. There is a saying in the Bodhisattva's practice, the ripening of bad karma is the purification of bad karma. Because if there is a bad karma, when something negative is happening, if you manage not to be negative about it, then your negative karma is purified. Of course, if you become negative about it, then of course you are creating more negative karma. Having said that, I don't mean by all means that you should look for trouble, you should look for suffering, you should look for problems, so that you can overcome your bad karma. I don't mean that. You know, you don't have to worry about it. I don't have to worry about it. If there is bad karma, it will show up. It will show up in all kinds of ways. Don't worry about it, okay? So, don't worry. By mistake, miss the ripening of good karma. Or we can never miss the ripening of bad karma. If we are wishing for it, we are just dreaming. No way, Jose. Okay? Okay. Therefore, achieving happiness in challenging time, I have spoken a little bit, and now I will let you ask questions, so that if you, through your questions, maybe some things become more clear.
Hello, Rinpoche. This is Cynthia Chi.
Yes. Okay.
I have a, I guess it's a question, but two thoughts. And
okay.
It's more practical questions.
Okay.
We have been in this challenging time for a long time. And okay. I'd like to know, and how long will this challenging time be over?
Okay. Okay.
Well, can I go on the second question?
Okay.
Okay. The second one is really, instead of we just sit and wait for the challenging
yes.
time to blow over, and what
yes.
should we do? Or what kind of position
yes.
we should take in terms
okay.
of our attitude or even actions, okay, to
yes.
help, to
yes.
speed up the process,
yes.
okay, push
okay.
the bad thing, you know, away from us. And,
yes.
oh, you know, what thing we can do to bring in or bring closer a more peaceful time or prosperous time.
Okay, okay. Actually, there is several kinds of challenge. One is a natural calamity. One is a man-made calamity. So if it is the man-made calamity, we can do a lot to change. We can do a lot to, let's say, you know, overcome. But if it is a natural calamity, then there is not so much we can do physically or orally, but mentally we can do everything. We can do everything. It depends on the situation. It depends on the what kind of challenge that we are facing. When you say how long this challenging time will last, I guess you're talking about world economy, world environmental degradation.
Yes.
So if you're talking about that, then each and every one of us, if we do our best, then it will definitely make differences. Because it is very easy for any one of us to say, I'm just one of the 5,000 million human beings, what I do will not make any difference. But if this is this is my attitude, then my friend's attitude will be the same, and their friend's attitude will be the same. So everybody on this earth is somebody's friend. And so if all of us tell ourselves and our friends that we should make things better, for that we should take responsibility to make things better. For example, economy and environment is absolutely man-made. So although sometimes we blame on weathers and droughts and all of that, but these are all man-made because weathers and droughts happen because of our lifestyle. So if we all say to each other, then as I said, everybody is a friend of somebody. So if I tell my friend, and in this case my disciples also, that we should do our best to be aware and be not a nuisance, not wasteful with our food, water, the air, the environment, the kind of way we talk to other people. So if everybody is careful, everybody is mindful, then this whole world will become careful and mindful world. And so that way, then all the conflicts, all the environmental problems, degradations, or the economic degradations, or the ideology conflicts, they all will vanish because everybody behaves themselves. And so we can do a lot. Now, going back to your first question, how long this will last? Well, long as we let it go on. And it will go on long as we contribute to it. It will go on long as we let it go on. And it will only change around if we all do everything possible to change it, turn it around. So I think it is simple as that. It is not some kind of unknown, mysterious force from somewhere else causing all this problem. I don't think so. Hello?
Hello. We are here. Yes.
So that's what I can say about this in brief.
Okay. Yes. We got it. Thank you, Rinpoche.
Okay. Welcome. Next question.
Hi, this is Mervin Han. Yes. I have a question I ask for your advice. During these difficult times, as a Buddhist, we all keep our prayer and dedicate to all sentient beings. But at the same time, when we pray, we always think of the suffering of all these sentient beings. A certain way, I'm getting more unhappy because when I think of them, I can see their suffering so much. And with us, all I can do is with prayer, and I can do I can do nothing. You know, physically, you know, practically, I cannot go and help them, or financially, I can help so much. So with that, can you give us some advice how we can balance our mind, because it seems like I get so attached with the suffering of the other sentient being, and at the result, I become very unhappy.
Okay, I'm sure there is many ways But one way I can tell you very clearly is ultimately nobody is suffering. No, ultimately everybody is Buddha. But relatively, everybody is suffering, including yourself, me, everyone. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you are Buddha, I'm Buddha, everybody is Buddha. So therefore, you don't look at the problems in the world, the problems and suffering of other peoples. You don't look at that at them as their ultimate suffering. They are relative suffering. So you are praying for them with wisdom. You are not praying for them desperately. Hello?
Yes.
You are not praying for them desperately. You are praying for them with wisdom, with understanding. So, therefore, you know nobody is suffering ultimately, but everybody is suffering relatively because they don't have the realization of the ultimate. And therefore, you have the balance already there. When something is broken, for example, like a very precious porcelain is broken, it is very bad because that porcelain, not broken, worth a lot. But now it is broken, it doesn't worth even 1% of it. But then you should know that it is just a porcelain. Whether it is broken or not, ultimately it is the same thing. So that way, relatively you are a little bit upset, but you will not go crazy about it. You will not fight with somebody who pushed you so that this cup fell down. So you will not become so negative about it. You can even have a big laugh about it, you know. My precious porcelain is now broken. Ha, 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 you know.
Okay. All right. I got it.
Okay.
Thank you, Limbo Ching.
Okay. Welcome.